In this panel, we will be talking about the history, ideology, and conceptualization of neoliberalism, so taking kind of a broader view, and perhaps presenters, even though obviously they have their own papers prepared, can already kind of build on the case studies that we heard and reflect on them as well. We have three fantastic papers. Matthew Eagleton Price will speak about neoliberalism as an analytical starting point, possibilities, and problems. Matt teaches at the Department of Politics and International Relations at SOAS. His primary research are in the fields of international political economy, particularly the politics of world trade, history of neoliberalism. So you see why he's here. His first monograph, titled Symbolic Power in the World Trade Organization, was published by OUP in 2013. And elsewhere, his most recent articles have been published in New Political Economy and Millennium. At present, he's working on a new book called Neoliberalism, The Key Concept, again, forthcoming by Routledge, which seeks to critique the common vocabulary associated with neoliberal notions and policies. Sorry. He holds a DPhil in International Relations, also from St. Anthony's College, Oxford. This may seem that we only take in Oxford graduates and people who had some sort of past, but this is not the case. It can be coincidental. So Matt, on to you.
Thank you, Amir. Thank you for organizing this this great workshop. It's already proved a great source of ideas and interaction. As you say in the introduction, I'm coming at this from the field of international political economy, which is comes out of international studies, but now is connecting with many other social science disciplines related to broader questions of the how and why capitalism takes its existing forms. And this my connection to employment law is questions about that is not direct in terms of I haven't done any particular studies on that, although it's always there in terms of indirectly in terms of illustrations and examples, and particularly in light of this book which I've put together and is due to be coming out in Routledge, as you mentioned, in the spring. And this is the only slide I've got, folks, because I'm getting a bit tired of doing slides, really, you know, since this point of the term. So this is the only slide, and the angle that I'm approaching neoliberalism at is addressing the political economy of it, but looking particularly at it and how we can understand it through the links between various forms of material restructuring, broadly as it's been understood since the 1970s, and questions about legitimacy and policy language. And within this, for this book, I've analyzed 44 key terms that have become associated with this thing called neoliberalism. These are what can be otherwise described as the buzzwords, the management speak, the corporate jargon, which gets integrated into so many different institutional settings now. So it includes not only the big concepts, but also a range of often deceptively apolitical and technical terms, which may be neutral in many cases, but I argue also in certain contexts carry a neoliberal stamp. And those words are including what we looked at in terms of notions of flexibility in terms of labor law is a key one, and then other ones like reform, partnership, many others. Now, this book and this wider project is trying to address two salient questions in the literature, as far as I see, and they're difficult ones. That, first of all, is what is new about this thing called neoliberalism? That is, particularly from a political economy standpoint, how can it be compared to other periods of capitalism? Often of interest within that is the reactions, the both how neoliberalism incorporates agendas, processes, ideas, but also rejects things which it doesn't consider to be valuable. You can also tie this much in a larger sense to the longer tradition of analysing liberalism. And for this book, this handbook on neoliberalism is what that addresses. The second question is links to this problem of justification, and that is how processes associated, again, with this thing called neoliberalism been been justified, often to particular audiences. So therefore, I'm interested in both the macro justifications that often appeal in different contexts, but also the local problems of justification. And I argue in this book that this neoliberal vocabulary, as I put it, it constitutes a particular capitalist vision of organisation and normative comportment. And I think that's that theme has already been appeared a little bit into the discussion so far. It's a particular behavioural model in terms of individuals, but also in terms of desired actors in an economy, entrepreneurs, and ultimately to the states that organise themselves by the logic of competition. So that these are different desired models of behaviour that are being shaped at the same time as there is the struggle over accumulation. Okay, so let me explore some aspects and introduce this context, this agenda. Looking at neoliberalism again as an analytical starting point, and what are the potential possibilities, and stress what are the potential pitfalls of speaking about phenomena through this lens. Now, to begin, I think that neoliberalism is a wonderful conceptual Swiss Army knife that can seemingly unpick and untwist and unlock all sorts of potential answers in the modern world. And you see this in terms of how neoliberal is attached to so many different phenomena now, and just to list off a real one: states, markets, projects, discourses, techniques, technologies, rationalities, restructurings, values, and cultures. And that's where we have ended the possibilities by which neoliberal becomes attached to. If there is a connecting thread at a broad level, it is concerned with how we think about capitalism, how we think about the market economy. And I'd like to suggest that although I think that this has some value, some use, it also suffers from a lot of weaknesses. And those weaknesses come through its inevitable conceptual inflation and its inevitable deploying across a whole range of, in relation to a whole range of objects and situations. So, just before I come on to the looking at those questions about the pitfalls, just put some context on where did neoliberalism as a term of use begin to emerge, and how to account for some of its popularity. Well, there's a coming from the this is increasingly well known in terms of literature from the 30s through to the 60s. Neoliberalism had a positive normative sense among intellectuals who circulated around the Montpellier society, such as Hayek and Mises, and those writers that were associated with the German ordo-liberalism tradition. Now, in many ways, this is the research agenda which Ben has about chipped in to contributed onto this, is in many ways the most coherent use, analytical use of the term neoliberalism. It's coherent because it's partly because we have some historical distance from this use of the term. It's partly because there's only a certain number of intellectuals who are involved in this. So, from where the term would later go, studying this is perhaps the most coherent use of the term neoliberalism. But then we get what happened next, and from the 80s onwards, it begins its steady rise in popularity among first social activists and then academics. It is strongly linked to social movements coming out of Latin America. You begin to see it used by intellectuals who oppose Pinochet's rule, and it quickly becomes a term, a catch-all category to organize various grievances. And for any of you who study social movements, it's important to have these frames to rally people around. And neoliberalism, from this early starting point of its rise, becomes a slogan to organize grievances about questions about inequalities, questions about unaccountable elite rule, and the influence of the US in particular. And by the 90s, it begins to flow and begins to get picked up in political economy, geography, and sociology. Often again by those academics who explicitly or implicitly are expressing some critique against the market system. So again, it carries forth and becomes a term which is used by academics who are broadly somewhere on the political left in some description. So it mirrors that legacy coming from the left in the activist world. And then once this has happened, once it's been skewed into that direction and becomes used by those types of academics and activists, it is then tends to be avoided by any researcher, policymaker, and public commentator that expresses any commitment to the market economy. And that's why we arrive at the situation whereby there's very few self-identified neoliberals. In fact, in the course of writing this book, I could only really come across two out there. One is a guy at King's in the political economy department who likes Hayek an awful lot. And then the other guy was some economist from Madrid who again was just again exceptional for advancing this.
So I am a neoliberal.
Yes, it's highly unusual because of this smearing, and because it's become a term of abuse, it's a slur term. The thing is that the interesting thing, just to give you one insight into Oxford, is that in my time as a student here, is that again, it didn't tend to be used very commonly. But it started to pick up, it started to become a little bit more popular, and that's partly this, that the search for terms, macro terms, which could be potentially adding some sort of critical bite and potentially be useful. And I argue in this book that this rise in popularity is in part linked to how neoliberalism exists in a conceptual space in relation to other concepts, particularly other larger concepts, which could be deployed in an argument in relation to similar phenomena. And here I'm thinking about how does neoliberalism relate to capitalism and globalization to a lesser degree. Now, there is I believe that there's a link here between the decline in the use of the term capitalism was already ongoing before neoliberalism kind of took off, but there's some relationship between this. Partly the decline in the use of the term capitalism is due to the intellectual weakening of Marxism and the rise in the social sciences and humanities and all sorts of agendas around expanding the question of difference, gender, race, sexuality, many other dimensions. I have a quote here just from a great book by sociologist Luke Boltanski and Yves Schiaparelli called The New Spirit of Capitalism. And they have a nice line which sums this up. It goes, "Dethroned from its status of key word in the 1970s, capitalism has been reduced to an inferior status, a somewhat indecent swear word, because it implied a Marxist terminology that many sociologists wish to forget, but also because it referred to something too large, too bulky, to be immediately observable and describable by specific situations." And I think that they sum it up quite nicely there. And that phenomenon is not unique to sociology. It's also at work in other disciplines, whereby there's a reaction against something. And capitalism, because it's so tied to the Marxist legacy, it was seen by some writers to be unfashionable or insufficient. Elsewhere, if you look at the links between neoliberalism and globalization, they're more complicated. Sometimes they're bundled together. But I also think that globalization, which had its zeitgeist in the 90s, lost a degree of policy luster in around the turn of the millennium. One could speculate that could be linked to the anti-globalization movement. There's something about the term globalization, particularly used in policy settings, how it lost its cachet, and I think it's probably in part tied to social movements who are labelled anti-globalization. So where does this kind of leave us? what makes a thought or practice neoliberal is often unclear, and there are different contexts. The early usage in terms of the neoliberal thought collective from the 30s to the 60s was reacting against different problems, in the sense that neoliberals saw their intellectual enemies everywhere in terms of state socialism, in terms of Nazism and other forces. So that's a different kind of context. By the 90s, in terms of how the term is used and how it acquired its now dominant sense, it is trying to denote something about policy tendencies that were first crafted in Western countries before spreading to other regions. And as people like David Harvey in the literature have stated, that neoliberalism is something as an agenda led by four powerful elites, one that emerged in reaction to Keynesianism and the reaction to the strength of post-war social movements. So neoliberalism is still an ill-defined target, but it's got something to do with the expansion of commercial markets, and in particular the privileging of corporations, and you can look at that in different degrees. The re-engineering of government as an entrepreneurial actor, the perception of that, and the imposition of forms of fiscal discipline, notably in welfare spending. Although, again, there's always the tensions between the actual practice. The aspiration to the fiscal discipline may not be always realized due to path-dependent effects and so forth. There's another influence on the how neoliberalism has been theorized, and that is in terms of the influence of Foucault and literature which has tried to say neoliberalism is this virus-like promiscuous phenomena that is infiltrating various social and legal bodies, and that we need to loosen the conceptual vocabulary in order to account for those forms of power, not just simply the Marxist, the classical Marxist perspective. Now, just turning towards critique and qualifications on this. Even before writing this book, I was not a big fan of the term neoliberalism. At the end of the book, more dissatisfied with it, and yet everyone's using it. So, what is the purpose of neoliberalism? The purpose of neoliberalism is part that it is a mobilizing tool for academics.
It's all about making money.
it's a way in which to rally people around an agenda. It's necessary to keep saying that, I think, not just to simply think that there's inherent meaning that's captured in this. It is about reoccurring struggles over capital accumulation, but those struggles are always going to be shaped by a range of conditions, nationally specific conditions, rules, cultures, and in particularly unpredictable effects of disruptions, crises, and setbacks. This is a theme in some of the literature about how neoliberalism is not wanting, but it becomes more adept at managing crises, and it sees opportunities within that. I mean, you can look at that in banking in particular. But the problem is where it becomes, how it's become a victim of its success in some ways. It's most problematic when it appears in writing where it is an omnipresent, omnipotent phenomena, a presumed force which is driving. But that's, I think, anything which smacks of that it can be problematic. It's also difficult, although not so much now. The distinction between state and market is being interrogated a lot better now than I think in earlier work on neoliberalism. So it's become, I don't know, it's always become a kind of straw man argument to say that you position these two as opposites. I don't think that's where a lot of the literature is exploring it. I would try to avoid essentializing neoliberalism as a single project, And that brings forward the sense of where does intentionality and power lie within this. And instead, think about it as some sort of broad descriptive shell, starting point for analysis. It has helped to, I think it helps to, because of its critical legacy, it helps to just sharpen the senses that there is something at stake here. That's just a very kind of fundamental thing, that I'm saying this word because there's something at stake, and I think it's certainly certainly very much better than globalization, which was so flat and lacked that sense that there was something at stake. So just coming to conclude that, coming back to what I'm trying to emphasize in this book as well, is that other people have looked at this relationship between the rhetoric associated with neoliberalism and to make clear that the whole point of this is to analyze the relationship between materialism and symbolism. It's not we're looking at this in terms of a dialectical relationship, not as saying that the rhetoric is all and so forth. But if something has come out of this work, which was a little bit, which I didn't expect quite to the same degree as I started it in with, is that I try to stress that there's an eclectic range of source material for neoliberal ideas. Yes, it comes from theory, it comes from neoclassical economics as a science and so forth, but there's a range of other subject matter which it gets incorporated into what could be called an ideology. And within this, I think management theory is central. Because it's really management theory which is at the vanguard of testing and reacting to challenges. It's perfectly obvious because managers are at the front lines of capitalist enterprises, and therefore we will be most sensitive to problems that are emerging. So I think that is, and particularly how management is diffused into other fields, is a key question. So in sum, I'd like to just conclude by saying that neoliberal practices will always be hybridized rather than pure creations, and how paradoxically, despite failures, setbacks, and doubts, of which the financial crisis is another exemplary case, the vocabulary has a way of refreshing itself, or at least becomes so normalized that actors struggle to figure out an alternative for capital.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.